Hi everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ash Manuel, and before I introduce today's guest, I've just got a couple things to mention. Now, on September 11, 2025, is the world's biggest gratitude lesson. The world's biggest gratitude lesson is a half an hour event where young people from around the world come together and we do a 30-minute gratitude session together. Now, this event has been, this will be the sixth year. It started during COVID when tough times are pretty tough. There's a lot of learning from home, in and out of lockdowns, a bit of uncertainty. And there was an idea about, well, yes, we are going through a tough time, but there's always, always things to be grateful for. We just have to look for them sometimes. And that's how the idea for the event came about. So we're up to the sixth year. Normally we get between or roughly around 50,000 young people from around the world. I think there was 40 countries that were involved last year, with the time zone difference, not everyone can be live, but it's such a good event. Students can see everyone, all the different classrooms on the big screen that we have. And it's a really great event where we'll practice gratitude together. So if you head over, if you click the link that's in the show notes, and you can register your class there. It's a free event. Well, the URL is actually bigclass.growingwithgratitude.com.au, and we'll also put the link in the show notes. Now, really excited for today's guest. Now, Isabella Portalesi is a teacher. She holds a Master of Applied Psychology, a MAP. You'll hear us talk about the MAP course a fair bit in today's episode. She is also an active member of the PESA, the Positive Education Schools Association, South Australian chapter. Now, the reason why I wanted to get Isabella on is to talk about application of positive education or well-being in the classroom. So the last few episodes have been with expertise in the field, but I really wanted to talk to a passionate educator and about how they go about applying well-being or positive education in the classroom. And this episode is an absolute cracker. There's so many great takeaways. I'm really excited because I've personally taken a lot away from Isabella's suggestions and her ideas. And I'm really excited for everyone to learn about how she goes about it. And I'm sure that you'll be able to apply a lot of what she mentions as well. So without further ado, we'll get into the episode. Isabella, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Ash.
An absolute pleasure. And one question I always love to start off with is how you got into education. Now, I often ask this and people don't, I don't know what it is, but it's quite often where people actually haven't always wanted to be a teacher, but they've ended up down the path. So what's your situation? How did you get into teaching?
You know, it's funny when people ask me this question, I feel like I always have to take them right back to that fork in the road moment. And so I studied psychology in my undergraduate degree, and I absolutely loved learning about how the brain works. There's something endlessly fascinating about understanding human behavior at that level. But as I moved through my studies, I found that it was hard to ignore that so much of the work was focused on what was broken. So, you know, the diagnosing, the treating, managing disorders. And it felt like I was constantly sitting in the aftermath of, you know, people's challenges or understanding that. And while there is enormous value in that, and there's no discredit to that, I had to question, was that the space that I wanted to work in long term? So did I want to stay in a model that felt mostly reactive? Mm-hmm. And at that same time, my husband had already started his career in education. And I remember watching him come home after working with students and families and just seeing the proactive impact he was having. So it did make me curious, you know, what would it look like to step into a space where you could actually prevent some of that hardship before it even began? Mm. And so when I got to my point of enrolling in education and doing my first teaching placement, I reached out to a few schools to see if they'd have me. And I remember thinking that if this doesn't feel right, like that's it, I'm pulling the pin on this whole pathway. But fate had other plans. And I ended up doing that first prac at a leading school that just happened to be working directly with Martin Seligman at the time. So he was the Adelaide Thinkers in Residence, and the school was rolling out some of the first pos ed initiatives, and I had this front row seat to something that was groundbreaking in education, watching these incredible educators embed the science of wellbeing into their everyday teaching. It had me hooked. So it was like a light switched on for me, and I suddenly saw how psychology could be about building things like strengths, resilience, belonging, meaning, and not just fixing what was broken. And I suppose that prac didn't just, you know, change my view of teaching, it redefined my entire sense of purpose. And I remember jumping online straight after finding that grad certificate in applied positive psychology. And it was at Melbourne University at the time. And the course had only two intakes a year. It was like a 6 month course for postgrad, but you needed 2 years of teaching experience. So at that time, I wasn't near that. And wasn't eligible, but I kept the tab open in my browser for years until I was ready. And as soon as I had my experience, more came out that you could, you know, apply for these postgrad degrees, and I found the right MAP program for me and applied. And in a way, I feel like positive psychology found me and not the other way around. And I've never looked back.
That's such a good story. I can resonate with that totally. And I mean, I agree totally with the whole, I guess it's like, for me, I always look like think about it as like learning a skill in a sport. Like, you learn it so you can execute it in a game. And like with positive psychology, you're learning these skills, so when challenging times do come up, you can actually execute them and use them to help yourself. And I totally, totally love what you said there and totally agree. And you mentioned some really interesting points about St. Peter's Boys, it was, that you did your prac teaching at, mm-hmm. and rolling out these groundbreaking approaches in the classroom. So I'd love to hear about, because one of the things that we want to do is give educators lots of ideas and tips and tricks about what they can apply. What are some of those things that you can recall that they were talking about and that maybe that you apply today?
Yeah, so it has been, you know, a long time since those days. So definitely as an educator today with my MAP qualifications, I think some really practical ways to bring pos-psych and wellbeing principles into our everyday routines is, I know I focus a lot on belonging. So how am I ensuring that I'm setting up a strong, inclusive classroom culture, and as an educator, modelling kindness and respect? And I think for me, I make sure I commit and take the time to set up that culture right from the get-go. But it's not something that's just, you know, one and done. It has to be filtered through everything, where, you know, shared rituals. So, you know, morning and afternoon, making sure we're having that dialogue together as a classroom, hearing from different perspectives, getting through to all different students to hear what they would like to share. And that just brought up something for me. I know that with one of my classes, I had students who just loved sharing in our rituals. It is consuming with time, but it is so worth it. It is absolutely worth it when it comes to how they feel they belong, and also how we can create that inclusive environment so that they're respected for their differences. So I had students who were so engaged in the arts and language, and they would often want to share some new words in the French vocabulary. And then I had students who loved, you know, motocross riding, tennis, golf. So it just varied so much. And we were having these shared rituals, and I just thought, you know what, the passion's there from these students. Let's get them to actually share in those morning rituals and have a bit more structure around how they're sharing this in, you know, with deeper dialogue to the other students. So we had French lessons from some students, and we had other students showing what they were doing on the weekend, and it was just promoting like a safe and consistent environment where every student felt like they could be who they were, and it promoted that peer connection.
Yep, it's so cool. So, are you saying just then that you, I guess, empower the students to actually teach these skills to students, like they might take a 20-minute French lesson or whatever they're interested in? Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Like there was room in those rituals to actually add some structure to it. So there was buy-in from the students. That's what they were wanting. And being attuned to each student meant that I could direct that and make sure that every single student was also getting that opportunity as well.
Absolutely. That is so cool. So what with that ritual, how was it set up? Like, as in a, was it like a morning, was it every day of the week, or was it a certain days of the week, mornings, afternoons? How did you actually work it, or how do you actually work it?
Definitely every day, where possible, obviously in education things come up. So, but we definitely had the conversations every day where the natural well-being language could be interwoven. It could even be through reading literature, making sure I'm choosing the right type of text to really infuse different well-being principles. So it's really just about being strategic in your planning and how you can weave, and I'm going to say weave a lot because that's exactly what I do, but choosing what kind of conversations need to be had when, I'm just jumping a bit here, but when I talk about being attuned, you can kind of see that, problems might start to be bubbling up in the playground. Okay, let's address this proactively. Let's choose text to promote this. Let's have discussions that, bolster how they can navigate through this before it gets that reactive end of the scale.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that, I guess, for me, like you talk about that, like attuned, like you'd have to, you to make this, I guess, be really effective, you'd need to know the students quite well.
Absolutely. It
How do
has to
you,
be. Yeah.
go about getting to know the students, particularly that maybe at the start of a school year when maybe you're familiar with them, but you're not, don't really know them that well?
Yeah, I think you need to take the time at the beginning of the school year to set up that classroom culture. There's no point rushing into your curriculum straight away. Of course, we have those structures in place to make sure that curriculum is addressed. It's very important. But just I kind of go by making sure I, very simple, addressing the students all the time by their name, making sure that I know at least five things about each of them. And, when I talk about being attuned, I can see where I can interject and bolster someone's confidence when maybe they're not feeling so confident. So, an example is in mathematics lessons. You might have a student who is an absolute gun at golf, but that confidence doesn't show in the math lesson. So how can I use their experiences of golf where they are, doing really, really well and interweave that into their math lesson to, remind them of their capabilities?
That's so good. It's really, really important, I think, to get to know the students. And being my background was a PE teacher, and I remember, because I mean, you sort of taught, you didn't, or you taught sort of most students, so at some stage, and so it was hard to get to know them well, like as in individuals, like heaps about them. But I always try to remember at least something or a sport that they played. So you walk past them in the courtyard, and I had a netball go on the weekend, or and it, their eyes light up as well. It's amazing, like when they know, it's just like that connection, and making feel like people feel like they belong. It's one of the most, I think, important skills that the teacher can, I guess, embed with their students in the classroom. And we've had a couple of people on the podcast recently talk about that as well, with the belonging and connection, and it's extremely important. Is that something that you learn in the MAP course, or is it something that you realized that was so important yourself, and how did you come to learn the importance of belonging and that connection?
I think it definitely is something that is important within myself, as well as, when you're studying in the MAP program, you go so deep into the research that you really understand the effectiveness of it and just how important it is. So, as you're teaching, you pivot and you adapt and you try new things to infuse that well-being science in it. So I would say that's.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's really a self-awareness piece on the teacher's behalf as well. Like it's really that awareness to get to know the students because you can get caught up in your day, get through it and you thought, oh, like this hasn't gone to plan, but you really need to be self-aware to get to know your students and make that a focus. Otherwise you can actually forget about it in the business of a school day. And before you know it, half a term's gone and you don't know anything about a child in your class and time slipping away. So it has to be a really conscious effort by the teacher.
Exactly right. And I think when you're, you know, so immersed in well-being and MAP, you do think to yourself, I need to live this so that I can actually authentically be this as a teacher and as a person. So that's definitely front of mind as well, to just be really authentic with living it first. And just, you know, back to what you were saying, you know, when the students light up, when you know something that is quite important to them, it's about finding those moments to notice and name what's important to them. And I always find that just noticing and naming out loud, you know, for, you know, the collective of students to hear, and showing that there's diversity, whether it's debating, whether it's chess, whether it's sport or language arts, it's really important for that inclusive environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I can just imagine that like students would just feel so comfortable in the environment when they're sharing with each other, non-judgmental, but that's not going to happen overnight necessarily, is it? It takes work.
It takes work and it takes commitment, but it is so worth it.
Yep.
And it actually, I feel like it mitigates problems. You know, when you're proactively building classroom culture, yes, there's always going to be bumps along the road, but that's the nature of schooling and nature of working with people. But I find that it just sets up students so well and the expectations are so high as they should be, with how we respect and model respect as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can just see like an environment like that, the students will get to know each other so well as well, which is really important to build that not only connection with the teacher, but with each other as well, which I can see as a real positive thing in classrooms as well. And just to keep, I guess, slight change of direction, Isabella. So I'm a big embedding like well-being or positive education like into everyday teaching, but also this is my personal belief anyway, is also you can specifically teach like well-being skills like gratitude and empathy in a more explicit way. What's your thoughts about, I guess, the embedding it, but also specifically teaching as well?
Yeah, I suppose what I've been talking about a lot is the implicit nature of well-being. So definitely the explicit teaching is really important as well. And it almost has to go hand in hand, that it can't just be one explicit lesson and then you move on and you don't have that language threaded through. So, you know, definitely looking at the curriculum and looking what programs can work best with your teaching. But I also think that you need to live it and not laminate it as well. So, you know, gratitude lessons, okay, how are we addressing that? How are we teaching lessons to promote positive emotion? I know lots of, you know, one of the best lessons that I do with my students is a strength spotting. So looking at the VIA strengths and going, okay, we're not going to go through the psychometric testing part of it, but let's actually identify, let's build that shared language. Let's look at, okay, what awareness do you have of the strengths that you have? And so there's that explicit teaching there, and it promotes that space where students feel safe, seen, valued for their own individual strengths, that all of us are different and our brains work differently from each other, and all of that. I think another explicit lesson that I love is when I'm setting up, even for mathematics, is debunking that math brain myth. So we do visual math games, and I remind them that their ability isn't fixed and everyone can grow their skills. So, and the key is that coming back to these ideas, not just the lesson, but yeah, a part of our everyday language and culture, so that it really sticks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I think it's that, yeah, it's consistency, isn't it? It's like, yeah, you can't go to like celebrate World Kindness Day and then not visit kindness again until the next kindness year, like day, year.
Exactly right. So, and like I said before, like everything should try to be complementing each other as well. So what texts are you, you know, specifically choosing to complement the gratitude program that you're doing? You know, what dialogue are you having that also builds upon that or complements it?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And again, it takes that awareness just to, and it's not always easy, like to think that way. And I think unless you have someone like yourself mention it to someone, okay, maybe try this approach. Sometimes you just don't know yourself, because unless you've done a map, I remember at university going through teaching, like I know it was a bit different probably when I go through early 2000s. It's probably like a lot different now, but back then it wasn't even like a teaching strategy at all. So hopefully it's maybe mentioned the general course a bit, like, but probably not. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and I'm not sure about the current teaching programs. I don't have too much of an understanding of, you know, what they're like at the moment. But I know in my case, I feel so privileged to work alongside my colleagues. You know, they're outstanding educators and leaders, and wellbeing is at the forefront. Whether, you know, they might not have a MAP understanding, but it's that implicit woven into the fabric of our culture. And it's like you said, it needs to be that kind of collective way of being as individuals first, educators and teammates, and we have to be anchored to that purpose. So, you know, exec, senior, middle leadership, and all the varying roles within education to shape that wellbeing culture, and, you know, and to make sure that it's really a part of the school's rhythm.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Matt Pittman, had him on the podcast recently, and I think he's written a book called Connection Before Curriculum, or along that lines anyway, about making sure that we are connected and help our students feel like they belong before anything else, and then everything else takes care of itself. So yeah. I think, yeah, it's such an important, it's been a big theme that's come up recently, and I think there's a reason for it. It's very important. Very important indeed. So just a couple, just moving on slightly, Isabella, with some practical strategies. So you mentioned that time in the mornings or the afternoon with the rituals, and also interweaving or what was the word that you, inter?
I've used weaving a lot.
Weaving, I was going to say interweaving.
Threading through, yeah.
Into lessons. So is there any other routines or ideas that you could share what you do in your classroom when it comes to the execution of wellbeing?
Yeah, so I make sure that when I'm planning lessons, I kind of consider how each student might experience, you know, some or all of those PERMA pillars in each lesson. So, okay, when I'm planning, will there be strength for where relationship skills could be built here? Meaning, achievement. So, I think about, so if I just hone in on achievement there, I remember doing a lesson with my students, and, you know, they're so used to structured, explicit teaching, which is amazing for them. And I remember sitting there just saying, okay, I'm going to hand you a piece of paper and I'm not going to give you instructions, and I want you to build an origami frog. And within an instant, you just saw panic on the students' faces. And I didn't leave them like that for long, but it was just kind of like an experiment. And then we paused and I said, okay, so obviously that was scary because that's not something we're used to, but let's talk about our internal dialogue just then. And how many students were so hard on themselves straight away, instantly. And, you know, they found it hilarious afterwards, but it was just that, you know, then we tried it again with a Sudoku, I think it was, or like a maths puzzle, and they had a piece of paper next to them. So for the first 5 minutes, no teacher instruction. And next to the paper, on the paper next to them, they wrote down their dialogue. So it started off like, oh my goodness, this is so hard, I give up straight away. And then so we kind of used that experience to then have an explicit lesson about our confidence. So I found that, yeah, I really enjoyed that lesson and they did too, because there was so much to build on from that.
Yep.
And then seeing how their internal dialogue shifted.
Yep.
And that things that, you know, turn into the learning pit and things like that. And that, you know, we're going to be confronted with these kinds of scenarios, and how are we going to make sure we, you know, are experiencing that positive emotion through challenge, and to get to that achievement.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool. Funny you say that, because I've been, as we're recording, we're in school holidays at the moment, but first day back off term in Victoria, I'm heading to a school and we're going to do these challenges. It's called, we just call it the grit. What do we call it? The grit quest challenge. And it's more skill. It's on different types of challenges. Like there's putting a puzzle together. There's a team challenge of how many basketball shots can you get in. There's problems to solve. But you're right, you don't give them any instructions. You just let them go. And then afterwards, it's having that conversation about, okay, well, you did this challenge. If you were to do it next time, what would you do better? Like having that reflection time about, okay, we've had a go at this, but now some, even stopping them after a couple of minutes just to reflect on their first couple of minutes of doing the challenge, and then seeing that conversation with each other. Okay, we've tried this, we've done that, it's not working. So what's some tactics or some strategy we can use to get better for the next 2 minutes? And it's
absolutely.
So good. It's a great way. It might not be every lesson you do, but it's certainly.
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't need to be every lesson you do. But I think you learn so much about the students and then how you can support them as well, because often that internal dialogue is going on and it's not noticed. So even if you're doing an explicit teaching lesson, you know, how is this student feeling? How can I make sure that, you know, I'm supporting them in the best way so that they are confidently navigating through this lesson and reaching that achievement?
So true. And I think like challenges like that, when you give challenges to students in whatever context it might be, and just having that conversation afterwards about like, well, is everything in life always going to be easy? So you're kind of setting them up for challenges that will happen, because life is full of challenges. Like there's no hiding it. People, we face challenges every day. And as we get older, the challenges seem to become slightly probably more harder. But kids don't know that. But at least we're, I guess, setting them up and getting them, I guess, providing the opportunities for them to think about things, about how they might handle challenges that do come up. So it's that preventative approach again.
Exactly right.
Awesome, Isabella. I love it. I'm interested to know with... For teachers starting out, we spoke about the course before, about we're not sure exactly what happens at uni these days with the course, but for a teacher, or they don't have to be a new teacher, but maybe who wanting to start with positive education in their classroom, who probably understands the benefit, but they don't know where to start, what would you suggest?
Something I think is really important to remember is that the essence of positive psychology, so the science of human flourishing, both within ourselves and in our relationships and communities, is already happening in schools every day. And it's not always labelled as such, but through the care the teachers show, the relationships they build, and the way they support students to grow, many of these principles are being applied both implicitly and explicitly already. And I say this because I know how overwhelming it can be for educators when something new is introduced, and it can feel like yet another thing to add to an already full plate. But in my experience, most schools are already doing so much that aligns with wellbeing science. And if they were to take a step back and audit what's already in place, how they build connection, foster resilience, celebrate strengths, they'd see that positive education isn't necessarily about doing more, but recognising, refining and deepening the great work that's already happening.
So true.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And something like it's that comes back to that Atomic Habits. Have you read that book, Atomic Habits?
Yes. I'm definitely due for a reread. That's great.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those ones that it's good to read to remind yourself. But he talks about the habit stacking, taking you something already doing and just applying it to what you're already doing. And I think that's what you're saying there. Like, we're already doing so much stuff, but it's just being aware of where you can fit, I guess, some positive educational well-being into, because we're already doing so much. You don't necessarily have to change the whole structure of what you're doing. It's just including those moments within to your daily routines and just stacking onto what you're already doing.
Yeah, and I think, more to that is of course a school that has the structures in place to have someone with expertise pulling it apart, noticing and naming it, and then building upon it is going to be advantageous as well. Because like you said, I would say that majority of teachers' well-being is at the forefront and it is so important to them. But it's not necessary. It seems more difficult because, maybe they're not exposed to the science as much as well.
Yep, absolutely. And I guess it's one of those things as well. Sometimes we want to do it, but we're just not sure exactly. If we can get some guidance, it goes a long way. And that's where I think you just mentioned then having a that person who can lead as well. And but you're right, I think majority of educators do want at the well-being at the forefront of what we're doing, so without a doubt. Now, I've got a bit of a different type of question. So with like the whole positive psychology or positive education, are there any mindsets or misconceptions about positive education that you'd like to shift?
Yes, definitely. I'll never forget, and you've probably been to some conferences as well, but the buzz you feel when you're attending a well-being specific conference, you're amongst, incredible academics, advocates, educators, leaders who believe in well-being and the profound impact it has. And you lead with this buzz. However, in this space, you could say that, you're preaching to the believers. And then you enter the real world and it's a lot more challenging, and there has to be buy-in. So I think one of the misconceptions about pos ed is that it's a fixed set of tools or a one size fits all model. And the truth is that pos ed sits within a broader body of well-being science. And I think that's where it can get really confusing. So one of the, it's constantly evolving, as all good science should. And there's always new research, new insights, lots of healthy debate. And that's a good thing. It means that we're refining our understanding and becoming more evidence informed over time. So I think with that in mind, that there's going to be new theories, new evidence, and debate around best practice, we should be taking that as a strength. Not as, a confusion of, oh my goodness, are we even doing the right thing? Because it means the field is alive and we're learning. As educators, we have to be willing to adapt as the research grows, just like we do in curriculum or pedagogy. And we need to be flexible and responsive when it comes to well-being too. So I know the term pos ed has definitely had its critics, and that's fair. There have been times where it hasn't been implemented with depth or clarity. And if a strategy or program is, continuing to evolve and it's no longer backed by evidence that's strong, we need to be willing to pivot. Because at the end of the day, this work isn't about sticking to the label. It's about what's best for our students, staff, and families and the well-being of the whole school culture.
So true. Absolutely. That's really interesting points. And I totally agree with what you're saying then. And it's one of those ones, it's an interesting, like, and even like with the whole, I mean, this is slightly different probably, but like starting out, like I was always a little bit, well, what's the, is there a difference between well-being and positive education? And just the terminology, there's a lot of words that get thrown around and it can get a bit confusing as well as like with what you're actually doing. So
Exactly right. And I think, our brains are wired. We like linear pathways. We want to know, okay, what do we do have to do here to get to here? And when there's all these kinds of hurdles in the way and different language and understanding, it can definitely get tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on, like, for yourself, Isabella, what practices do you have in your, I guess, life to look after your well-being? Like, obviously, educator, I know that you've been on maternity leave this year. But I guess thinking back to when you're in the classroom, maybe it's a tough time of year or stressful time of year. Maybe there's I don't know, reporting coming up. How do you look after your own well-being?
Yeah, so I suppose going back to those rituals as well. So, kind of what rituals do I have in my life that, you know, ensures that I'm experiencing that positive emotion as well? So, I know that exercise and making sure I'm sleeping well and making sure that holistically I'm, you know, in a really good place with all those elements. So, I try to keep my schedule really consistent as well. So, you know, term time is busy. And, you know, sometimes I think teachers feel like they don't even get to have a breath before the holidays come. So just taking that time to go, I suppose for me is, you know, being organized and that proactive organization really supports me as an educator to make sure I'm on top of everything and I can be the best educator that I can be.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, exercise, I think such an important thing. Like for me, when you mentioned about your like structured, I laugh because I'm exactly the same. I'm very routine and start exercises. If I don't exercise, I'll get up and go straight to the gym. That's my part of my routine. And if I don't do it, even if I do some exercise during the day, I just feel slightly out of whack. But if I do it, and I'm pretty good at sticking to the routine, but I just feel so good afterwards, and it sets you up for the day. Like it's the most underrated thing I think we can do, exercise.
I know. And there's just practical ways. And when you think, you know, when you zoom out, you think, you know, it's pretty simple when you say it, you
Oh,
know,
absolutely.
exercise, good sleep. But they are things that you have to build into your habits.
100%. Couldn't agree more. And that's what I like to explain to like kids as well. Like you can't tell them what to do, but you can share like building connection, like and with the students. Explain how you deal with situations. Like always give examples. Like if we're doing a gratitude activity or something like that, I always explain how I use gratitude in my life. Because and way I explain it is that if I'm having a bad day, I'll just take some time to stop and reflect and just reflect on one or two things that I'm grateful for and use my self-talk to reframe that thing that's bothering me to a more positive perspective. And that's like one of the things that works really well for me. So you share that with them to build their tools and here's something you can try rather than telling them what to do, but just giving them ideas about what can help you if you are having a bad day. And exercise is another one that you can do that can improve your mood. So
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that reminded me of, you know, the gratitude lessons that we've done, or not even lessons, but moments that we've had. And you get to such a deep level of, you know, actually looking within and going, what am I grateful for? And when you hear the students, you know, speak about their families and their parents, and it's just beautiful to see that they're taking the time to acknowledge that as well. And there's so much power in that. And I think even, you know, when we go to chapel once a week and they acknowledge, you know, the gratitude that's within, you know, biblical stories and things like that. Yeah, it can definitely be acknowledged across lots of different modes.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Now, Isabella, I think I've probably just got one more question. I've actually taken so much away like today. Like I've got some really good like ideas from you as well. Like one of them I love. Like I'm sort of really excited about that one. The whole, I guess the giving, or empowering young people to make them feel like they belong by taking a lesson. Like it doesn't have to be a long lesson, but just taking them through some French words or taking them through maybe a game that they invented on the weekend. I don't know. It could be anything, but I really love that idea. But that's so good. I can just picture like how it would make light up a person's face, like the student's face. You could just imagine the excitement and the pride that they're going to take in teaching the class.
They do. They have so much excitement, and yeah, absolutely.
Ah, so cool. So I guess just to finish off with, is there anything else that you'd like to share about maybe something like a key moment that you I don't know, discovered that really helped you with your, I guess, practice of well-being in the classroom? Is there anything else you'd like to share, or have we covered it?
I think, I could probably just share, how MAP has shaped the way I approach teaching and supporting students. So it's my MAP study hasn't just changed what I do in the classroom. It's changed who I am as an educator and honestly as a person. I know I've spoken to that. And, it's one thing to know the theory behind PosPsych and to understand the research on strengths, belonging, kindness, gratitude, optimism, but it's another thing to live it. And, day in, day out, especially when things aren't easy. And I think back to my nonno a lot when I reflect on this. He was fostered out at a very young age, and he only went to school up until year one, as he was required to work on a farm. And he always had this incredible depth of wisdom, and he had so much gratitude despite the challenges that he had faced. And he actually lived until 100, which is amazing. And he would always say that children deserve the utmost respect and care. Mm. And I feel like this wasn't just something he said. He was, a nurturing father, grandfather, and he embodied what it truly meant to honour that. And so I feel like this philosophy really sits at the heart of how I show up in the classroom. And, through MAP, I've come to deeply understand that the importance of belonging and how vital that is, that every child feels valued, not just for what they achieve, but for who they are. And that comes back to, how they share what makes them really happy to the rest of the class, that collective well-being and, creating those pro-social behaviours as a collective. So I guess I'd say, it's not just classroom posters. Everyone comes with different strengths, and those differences make the class community richer. And to celebrate that, whether you're teaching a lesson, working with families, or collaborating with colleagues, that's what MAP has taught me, that wellbeing isn't something we just deliver, it's something we model, and we have to live it with consistency and heart, and the impact is profound.
Yeah, that's a great way to finish. I love that story about your now my pronunciation of some words.
My nonno, that's okay.
Yep, nonno. That's so true. I love that. And just where with the MAP, the Master of Applied Positive Psychology, is that only through Melbourne University, or is there other?
No, so I actually did mine through CQU, and it was fantastic.
What's that? CQU,
Central Queensland University.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it was phenomenal. Positive psychology, we explored, the broader topic, and then we could hone in on POSED and make it more contextual to what I needed to learn.
Mm. Yeah, so good. And if anybody's looking to do a MAP, I'm sure that if you Google it, you'll be able to find.
Yeah. Look, I would honestly advocate it, because it's not just it's life changing for everything about how it's about your philosophy and kind of how you go about life as well. You need to live it first, and then.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. I totally agree with that. And that's one of the reasons I started growing with gratitude, because years ago now, I came across positive psychology as a thing through Martin Seligman. We probably came across him in different ways, because I was reading some of his books and listening to a few of his interviews, and it just resonated so much. And I thought, wow, this is unbelievable. And the good thing is you can actually practice. That's the difference. Knowing, not only knowing what gratitude is, but actually doing it and living it. That's the whole game changer.
Exactly right.
And when I
it's
started
taking doing the that, theory, the research, and then applying it. Yeah.
It's a game changer.
It's amazing that you get to do that. It's just, phenomenal.
Yeah, unbelievable. So it's such a good thing. I highly recommend. Personally, I haven't done the course, but I've heard so many good things about it. So, yeah, check it out if you're interested in that. And Isabella, where can people find you? I know you're on LinkedIn. Is that the best place?
Yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best place, I'd say, yes.
Excellent. We'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes.
Perfect. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Isabella. Really appreciate it. There's so many takeaways that you have given us today. And personally, I've learned a heap as well, which is fantastic. That's what we're here to do. We're here to learn off the people, particularly in the classroom, who are, I'll just use this saying the other way, putting the rubber to the road, whatever it's called. Basically, implementing it. That's what I'm trying to say. But really appreciate you coming on and sharing all your expertise with us. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.